the sound of praise for your Sunday morning.
The only one who could ever teach me.
Introducing Reverend A.R. Bernard of the Christian Cultural Center.
Was a son of a preacher man.
And Rabbi Joseph Potasnik of Religion on the Line.
The only one who could ever teach me.
Now, on Talk Radio 77 WABC, here's the Rev and the Rabbi, where faith matters.
Good morning, I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend, during this crisis, we're going to talk about health and holiness today with two special guests. How do you survive as a house of worship during this critical period? What do you do and what do you not do?
That's right. We've got Rabbi David Shucka of Bethel in New Rochelle.
Right.
And we have Reverend Dr. Gawain DeLeo as well. You know, it's funny, the opening phrase for the show is the sounds of praise. But there's going to be the sound of silence in some houses of worship today, considering what's ahead.
Yeah, but thanks to technology, the homes will not be silent as they somehow stay connected to a house of worship that is always there for them. Thank you. Let's look forward to the interviews.
We've got some great guests coming up.
Where faith matters, the Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend Bernard, this is a difficult time for so many people, particularly those in New Rochelle, which now has a containment area. We're very fortunate to have on the line with us Rabbi David Shuck, who's a friend, colleague. He's the spiritual leader of Temple Beth El in New Rochelle on North Avenue, a very prominent congregation with a wonderful rabbi. They've had a history of great rabbis there. So I thank you, Rabbi Shuck, for coming on the air with us.
Of course. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Rabbi.
There's a new phrase now that has become operative, and that is social distancing. And you look at it and say, how can one be social and distant at the same time? And now with technology, we're able to synthesize those two worlds. So tell us about what's going on in New Rochelle, what's going on at the synagogue, and what's going on in your congregation is happening to many others as well.
Right. So right now, because Bethel is in the containment zone, we're actually shut down until March 27th. So there was a period of time, we basically shut down last Tuesday, and we just had Minyan, so we were able to have a small group of people in the sanctuary in a large space, but now we're shut down for everything. So what we're doing is we're creating community through technology. So for instance, last night we had an evening of song and teaching that we did from the sanctuary and broadcast out to the community through live stream and Facebook Live. We have classes that are being taught tonight. I'm leading a class on Zoom on spiritual resilience during challenging times. And so we're using different media in order to reach people and keep them connected to one another. We've also set up new systems and an emergency line and an emergency email for our community for people who are either quarantined within our community or it's not safe for them to leave their homes because they're immunocompromised or because of their age. So they can contact us on this hotline, and we have volunteers waiting to go shopping for people, to pick things up from CVS, whatever it is that they need. We're here to address those needs as they unfold.
So you see, the beauty of community is that you're all there reaching out to one another, and no one is excluded going through a difficult time. And yet we take a moment to say, what can we do for those who are facing even more difficult circumstances than we are? What happens with life cycle celebrations, or what happens with funeral observances?
So we're taking our cues from the public health authorities, and it seems like where things are headed is that funerals will need to be graveside and will be limited in number. What that number will be isn't yet clear. And shivas are going to have to be through technology also, as challenging as that is, through Zoom, through FaceTime, phone calls. And this is a time in which those media will be very, very important to support people as they're grieving, because the most crucial piece of life cycle moments, such as a funeral, is being, you know, surrounded by people who hold you up during such a difficult time. And, you know, as difficult as that it will be for us, you know, we really need to follow, we need to prioritize the public health needs of the community. And bar and bat mitzvahs, we're still working out, but we may be able to create scenarios where just four or five people, you know, a parent, a child, come together and virtually do parts of what they've prepared for a bar bat mitzvah, reading haftarah or teaching in their Dvar Torah or their speech, and ways for us to give them blessings through these technologies. So it's challenging, but I have no doubt that the community will meet these challenges. We're resilient. We're resilient. And this is just, in some ways, this is just the beginning for our community, and we hope, because we're in the center of this, we hope that we can become a model for other, you know, houses of worship that will try to find ways to remain connected and to support
sure.
one another.
Rabbi, it creates a new paradigm for doing ministry. We have to really think outside of the box in order to make these things happen. What about weddings that have been planned in advance?
So we haven't, you know, we're working this out day by day, and I don't actually have a wedding on my calendar in the next few weeks, and so it hasn't really, we haven't gotten there yet. Some of this is going to be determined, of course, by what is permitted in terms of public gatherings. So it's not, it's perhaps likely that within New York City, where a lot of these venues exist, we won't be allowed to have public gatherings for celebrations such as a wedding, and so we would have to do the wedding. We could do that virtually as well, you know, with a small group of people.
You know what I'm afraid of? The people are going to say, when this crisis is over, wait a minute. We can continue having virtual experiences. Why do we have to come anymore live?
Yes,
we can live stream. We don't have to come live.
Yeah, I will say, you know, on Purim, we were already shut down on Purim, which is a holiday that just passed, and where we hear the Megillah, we hear a scroll that's chanted. And it was so moving because Zoom is a technology that enables you to see everybody who's mm-hmm. on the line.
Right.
And so you saw little children quarantined in their homes, but still dressed up, listening to the Megillah being read, you know, insisting on finding joy in these challenging times. And the last thing I'll say is there's a lot of quarantined families in New Rochelle, and there were people who came from Brooklyn. And they went to the quarantine homes, they cracked the windows open a little, stood outside of the windows, and read Megillah
wow.
to people.
Wow.
And it was so moving to see this. So, you know, we find ways.
Yeah, I think it begs, what you just said begs the question of, as to what does quarantine really mean? Because you said you had people come from Brooklyn, come to homes in New Rochelle. So what does it mean, actually, that you're quarantined?
That's a great question, and there's outside of New Rochelle a lot of confusion about this. Right now, all that it means is that places of large gatherings, like schools and churches, synagogues, are not allowed to function. And so any place of a large gathering is shut down. Otherwise, businesses are open, people are free to move around, as long as they themselves are not quarantined because they were around an active case. People are free to do whatever they'd like. They come, they go as they please, people are walking their dogs. I picked up coffee in Starbucks this morning. So in that sense, you wouldn't actually know if you came to New Rochelle that you were in the containment zone.
So, you know what I find very heartening, Reverend Rabbi, that people are asking, what does Jewish tradition mandate or recommend in these kinds of difficult circumstances? And as you said, Rabbi, well, we consult with health officials because Jewish law says health is most important, transcends all other considerations. But the fact that people want to know how to integrate a religious experience with a health crisis, in and of itself, I find very inspiring. Because those who don't care don't ask the question. But those
right.
with commitment
right.
go to the extra step and said, I want to fulfill, you know, my you know, the religious demand of me, but I want to do it the right way. I want holy place to be a healthy place. And I think that's a very encouraging sign.
And it's actually one of the most beautiful concepts in Jewish law is that we have a category called Sha'at HaDchak, a time of pressing need, where we create certain leniencies that enable people to fulfill their religious lives that we wouldn't apply in normal times. So this is one of those times where perhaps normally you couldn't say Kaddish, you know, you couldn't say a prayer for those who have departed, who you're memorializing through a virtual minyan. But in a time like this, if you have 10 people in one space and you can see them and they can see you in real time and you are quarantined, you would be able to say Kaddish with that group. And so, you know, the system of law that's developed for the last 1,500 years has developed categories to help integrate Jewish spiritual lives into times that are very challenging and create pressing needs.
So you're not allowed to say, I'm going to jeopardize my life because I want to fulfill my tradition.
Never.
Right? I mean, you know, I hear sometimes people say who are sick, I'm going to fast in Yom Kippur even though my doctor has told me I have to eat. We always say, no, you got to listen to your doctor first so you can enjoy many or celebrate many more Yom Kippurs.
Right.
I thought that only happened in Christianity. I didn't know that. You guys,
well, you took it from us. You know, you took it from us. Come on. Here's another example.
We don't valorize the concept that, you know, Jews right now would, you know, we don't want people saying, oh, the shul is closed, the synagogue is closed, so we're going to gather 15 people in a home and we'll pray together. We don't valorize, that's actually forbidden according to Jewish law right now because we're told by public health officials that that's a danger to one's health.
All right, we'll be right back. Stay tuned, more of The Rev and the Rabbi.
The Rev and the Rabbi skillfully unites religions, faiths, and all people into the most compelling and thought-provoking dialogue each week. Hosted by internationally esteemed pastor, Reverend A.R. Bernard, and renowned Rabbi Joe Potasnik, The Rev and the Rabbi invites everyone from various professional backgrounds and platforms to join the conversation as they discuss how faith fits into our everyday lives.
Welcome back to The Rev and the Rabbi. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
I think it's important, I just want to say this, that instead of just shutting down completely, that it's forcing us to think of other alternatives, methods of delivering the experience, delivering our faith. Because in society, you know, houses of worship, we symbolize hope. At a time when there's fear and anxiety, and yet we're talking about closing down the very houses of hope, the very places that people run to. I remember after 9/11, you know, churches, houses of worship were packed after 9/11 for at least 6 months. But, you know, we represent hope. And if we shut down completely, we simply seal the fear and anxiety that the public is experiencing.
That's right.
Yeah, no, this is, you know, and also remember, we've always had people who are living under very limited circumstances in terms of they may be in hospitals, you know, they may be have other health conditions that isolate them more from the rest of the community. So we've always tried to find ways of reaching them even when it's most challenging. And I always admire the volunteers. You just mentioned families coming from Brooklyn to read the Megillah, the Scroll of Esther, to those who are quarantined. Opening the window a bit and reading it through there. I mean, what a wonderful moment that is in showing how much we need each other, need to help each other.
Yeah, and perhaps it's trite to say, but I think important to state anyway, that these moments are opportunities for people to dig down deep and find ways to treat one another with compassion and love beyond what they're used to. And, you know, so we have everything that's happening here for the next 2 weeks is happening virtually. So we now have high school kids, and their school is closed, and we're matching them up with some of the people who are elderly and don't quite know how to use the technology. and they're going to their homes and they're going to teach them, you know, they'll download what they need and teach them how to use it so those folks can stay connected to everything that's happening. So there are opportunities here for connection.
I would imagine some of the young people who are scheduled for bar and bat mitzvah, they're not that sad about the fact that people aren't coming in.
Okay,
you can stay there, and I'll do it here. It's quite all right. Don't worry about me. But
I have to mention cut you off, Rabbi. But the economic issues involved, because many houses of worship don't have the capacity to not have a weekend service. They don't have the technology, nor do they have the budget. And to go maybe 2-3 Sundays or Sabbath days without revenue sources, that's going to cripple some of these smaller houses of worship.
Yeah, this is a challenge for communities in different ways. You know, for our community, the challenge is, you know, our nursery school has, next Tuesday will be 2 weeks that we had to shut down our nursery school. We have a lot of families with two working parents, and they have their children now at home. And so they have to arrange for childcare. They have to either not go into work. I mean, it's very challenging economically. As we know, this whole public health crisis has been a challenge for our economy.
You know, I got a call from a chaplain at a hospital on Long Island, and the chaplain said, we're pretty sure there's someone in this hospital who has contracted the coronavirus. What do I do as a chaplain? And I said, firstly, I thank you for calling. The fact that you didn't just, you know, get into your car and leave. And secondly, obviously, you have to listen to the protocols of the hospital. They will advise you as to a child. But think of all the people who want to administer spiritual strength and support. How do they operate under these kinds of conditions? That's what's being discussed. That's why there are constant conversations with health officials, city, state, federal. We want to hear. And by the way, those are the people that need to speak the loudest. We want to hear what those in the know have to say. We don't want to hear political spin. We want to hear what people who have the experience in the area, what are they advising us?
Right.
Yeah. You know, and Rabbi, I always talk about the fact that leadership tends to be a foul weather job because people are less interested. Who's the leader when everything is going fine? But when things go wrong and there's a crisis, that kind of pressure weighs down on the leadership, especially when you're talking about the imam, you know, the rabbi,
right.
The priest or the minister has to make a decision, you know, and let's say the government says, no, you can still have gatherings, but that leader still has to make a decision what's in the best interest of the congregation, the staff, but also economically, the impact that it's going to have. That's the
sure.
long weight that people don't realize.
And we're not taught that in rabbinical school, you know, or any other theological institution. Someone said the test of leadership is how you confront the unexpected, the unforeseen. Rabbi Shuck, from what I've heard from your colleagues, and I know the New Rochelle community somewhat, you have been extraordinary in remaining vigilant and saying, we are here for you. Whatever way we come to you, we'll be there. We're not just going to turn our backs on you. And I think that's a great sign of not only leadership, but of hope for those who are feeling a little bit hopeless right now.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you.
All right. Rabbi David Shuck, so I can't tell people to go to services this week, but I can tell them Facebook Live or Zoom. Yeah. All right. David Shuck, always a pleasure listening to you.
Thank you very much.
You be well.
Absolutely, Rabbi. You're in our prayers.
Bye-bye.
God bless.
Where faith matters, the Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
We are privileged to have now on the line Father Gawain DeLeo, who is the spiritual leader of St. Bartholomew's Episcopal Church in White Plains. And recommended highly by Rabbi Lester Bronstein of White Plains. And I must tell you, Reverend Bernard, the relationships in the New Rochelle White Plains communities are extraordinary. They're extraordinarily close, where clergy come together. I know in many cases they study together, but now during this challenging time, they're really supporting each other. So thank you, Father DeLeo.
It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me onto your show.
So I have two reverends and a rabbi, a little bit outnumbered. But we had Rabbi Shuck on before you, just for equal time.
Two revs and a rabbi. I like equal time. Good.
So look, obviously life has changed drastically. Talk about how it began and what's happening now.
So, yeah, as it is, I just got back from a trip to Israel. This is a Father Gallen calling. And the day that I left, they had just closed the Church of the Nativity, which had been infected, especially after a group of Greek pilgrims had been there. So I was living that rite in the midst of my tour of Israel. And then when I came back, of course, we had a number of instructions from bishops as to whether or not we were going to share the common cup, how we were going to distribute the peace, which clearly were impacting all our communities. So, yeah.
Yeah, and what's happening? So at the church now, there are no public gatherings, or in White Plains you can still have them, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And it's really been on a case-by-case basis. Some of my colleagues are choosing not to have any services. Others are still having services, but they're instructing people to, especially people who have compromised immune systems, or if they're elderly, not to come to services. And I know that in my case, I will still be having a sacramental service, but I will be discouraging attendance. So the idea is that we as a will still do the sacramental rites, but in the end, we might even live stream the program and ask people to simply visit us using the web.
I was going to ask you about that, because there are many churches who are not set up for live streaming yet. They don't have the technology. They don't have the budget. So that's going to leave them in a tough situation to reach and keep people connected to the church itself, correct?
I think that's absolutely true. In fact, when I was just on a conference call with several other clergy, and we were going through some of the technical things that would need to happen. It's not as if most clergy necessarily know how to do the technological work. In fact, a couple of the clergy were teaching people how to use Facebook Live. So yeah, that's absolutely the case.
You know, I'm thinking, Reverends, that this may now be a requirement as we are students in our theological institutions to know the technology, just in case we learn from experience and going forward. You know, not that this is going to be the new norm, but it may be a norm during a limited period where we have to understand exactly how to provide the various services that people want in their lives.
That's absolutely the case. We have to learn how to use YouTube and form people via the internet. The technology is available to us. We'll have to spend some time learning how to make these tools work for us.
What do you
you have to consider? I'm sorry, Rabbi, but you have to consider also what traditions can be translated to a media platform as opposed to those that require the presence of people, because you know, baptisms, etc., where people have to be there as part of the gathering in order to experience those sacraments, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Look, there's no replacement in the long run for people gathering. And that is what churches, synagogues, religious communities are for. I mean, we're meant to gather as people. And for 99% of the challenges that our societies face, being with other people is part of the cure. It's just in this particular case where social distancing is really what's going to help us manage this pandemic. It's in this case where we need to readjust the traditions and the rituals that we do have. So I will simply put, postpone the baptisms until we get to a point where our public infrastructure can handle the disease. We're not there yet, of course.
Rabbi,
and of course that includes. I'm sorry again. That includes things like online giving, because there are many who don't give if they're not in the building attending the actual worship service. They'll wait until whatever the next time they come to church. I mean, we experienced that. I know, Rabbi, you experienced that.
Yeah.
Is that true for you, Father DeLeo?
So I believe that will be true. I mean, fortunately, in my specific congregation, you know, people give monthly using their bank account directly to the church, but that's unusual. There are a fair number of people who come to church once or twice a month, and if they're not coming this month, that's going to be money we're not going to see in the collection plate. So
right, and yet the bills still have to be paid.
Yeah.
You know, they're the economics to ministry that many people don't understand. Rabbi, go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking. Look at the fragility of life. Look how the changeability. Just last month and months prior to that, we were talking about security concerns. How do we protect people in the building? And going through all the different, you know, technology and in-person kinds of protective strategies so that people are safe. Now we're not there anymore. Now we're looking at a different challenge. And, you know, look at what life throws at you when you least expect it. And it is just, to me, a very, very reassuring to know that there are people who are working together. And I know the interfaith community of Westchester is coming together and saying, how do we address this? And how do we address it collectively? We have our separate, you know, religious concerns, but how do we as a community help one another?
Mm-hmm. So, right.
Well, we've been in touch with one another. We've been texting each other. We've been calling. I know with some of my colleagues. Well, yesterday we had 25 people on a Zoom call. I mean, we were thinking, hey, we could do Zoom for the entire congregation if we needed to. But the reality is that because the interfaith communities have prior relationships, we are in touch with each other, and we're helping each other walk through this as best we can, and we're paying attention. So none of us has actually had to face something, or maybe a few of us have, but we haven't necessarily in the immediate past dealt with something this size. So the best thing that we can do is use our relationships and, as best as we can, stay in touch with one another.
All right, we'll be right back. Stay tuned. More of The Rev and the Rabbi.
The Rev and the Rabbi skillfully unites religions, faiths, and all people into the most compelling and thought-provoking dialogue each week. Hosted by internationally esteemed pastor, Reverend A.R. Bernard, and renowned Rabbi Joe Potasnik, The Rev and the Rabbi invites everyone from various professional backgrounds and platforms to join the conversation as they discuss how faith fits into our everyday lives.
Welcome back to The Rev and the Rabbi. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
I think out of crisis, often good things do come out of a crisis like this, because houses of worship, various religious expressions and practices, we discover that we have so much in common, and that draws us together at times like this.
Yeah. Rabbi Shuck spoke about funerals will be limited to 25. Have you heard? Do you have that also? Outdoor graveside services rather than, you know, chapel services?
So those are the sorts of things that we are in the midst of discussing and trying to plan for, because that is exactly the sort of event where you could easily transmit the virus. That sounds like a very reasonable plan. But I think right now every congregation is right now having their meetings with their board members, their vestries, their parish leaders to figure out what are the best decisions that they can make in this time. I mean, right now I've canceled all weekday classes We're trying to really restrict all gatherings to the minimum. And that's simply to keep people safe and to do our part to halt the spread of the disease as best as we can. So,
you know, Reverend Bernard, you and I have spoken about face-to-face, and we said very often that technology, you can have, you can be on Facebook, but you don't have the, you know, the comfort of being there face-to-face with someone, especially during difficult times. Now we're seeing the other side of this, where you can't have that face-to-face, even though you want it, and you're relying, thankfully, on technology to get you there. What happens, Reverend, to elderly people who are not familiar with the technology? Are their support groups able to set them up?
Sure. Well, absolutely. What we're trying to do is make sure that we call the elderly, people who have their immune systems compromised, that we're at least in touch with them. I mean, you know, 2,000 years ago when the holy texts were being written, they did not have phones. So you had to write a letter which would get to its destination in 3 to 6 months. But fortunately, we can care for each other by at least staying in touch. They might not have email, but they still have a phone. And that's what we're doing in my context is, you know, I'm calling, just going through the phone list and calling people one by one just to let them know that we're there for them. And if need be, we can help them get what they need. So,
Father DeLeo, I think we share this in our faiths, and that is that we have missionaries who actually go into the nursing homes, who go into areas to serve the seniors. Is this going to change the way you and your congregation and your ministers address these issues?
Well, yes, because some nursing homes will not allow anyone into them right now. So, so we're facing the reality that our own work is being constrained. And we're following the rules as best we can. So we're making, we're reminding people to wash their hands and take the advice of the doctors and nurses that are around us. So if they decide that, you know, we can't enter those places, then we don't go into those places. We're here to help, not to be an obstacle.
Yeah, what you just said is of critical importance, and this transcends any particular denomination. We have to be mindful always of health concerns. Our religions do not tell us to make health secondary and holiness primary.
Right.
We have to integrate both worlds. And I emphasize that over and over again. We don't want to hear people saying, look, I don't care about myself. My health, as long as I'm, you know, fulfilling my tradition, my health is not that important to me.
Or,
that's an irresponsible, and that violates religious thinking.
Right. Absolutely.
All right. What have you found to be your biggest challenge thus far?
Well, I think the biggest tension in particular is that churches and religious gatherings are crucial to what we do. And I tell people that churches are one place that you can find other human beings. And in a society which suffers from great loneliness, and many of our diseases are related to people being isolated and the stress that happens when you're isolated, being in this situation where we're advocating the opposite actually is a great tension that's been very difficult for the community to handle.
Interesting.
We're going to do the best we can. I believe that this is a very important exception because health is, as you said, very important, and you know we want people to live and flourish. But most of the time, I'm saying to people, we should gather when things are tough. And this is a time where I'm not able to say that. I'm saying, stay away. Like, even in times where we need security, I say, well, if we stick together and we work together, if we're in each other's proximity, we can handle anything. But I can't say that. So that's been very difficult. And, you know, people are going to miss not coming together on Sunday.
The whole idea of the church, of course, Father, you know this in the Greek, is ekklesia or ekklesia, And it means an assembly, a gathering of people. That's who we
exactly
are.
Right.
That's what we do.
Same thing in Jewish tradition. Beit Knesses. A synagogue is a house of entering. It's a house of gathering.
Right.
And you're right. You know, what you just said before, Reverend, is so, you know, it's so different than what we've always preached and practiced. We're always saying, you know, we need a quorum. We need people coming. We need community, being there with each other.
Yeah.
And now we're the social distancing, something so novel for us. But we'll get through this. We've got through so many challenges over the years. We'll get through this. We'll we'll be strengthened. And then we'll be on to another challenge. Who knows what the next challenge is going to be?
What is next?
I'm
just so thankful that we have been connected with other communities, that I've been connected to the rabbis in White Plains and in New Rochelle. Because if I hadn't made those connections, then this would be so much harder. I don't know what I would do now if I didn't weren't on those phone calls with people I knew and loved.
You know, for all the critics of religion and always point out the things we do wrong, I think it's time to, you know, step back and look at what we're trying to do right here. And, you know, how we have that inner strength to cope with some of the real serious conditions of life today. People are hurting. People are panicking. And they need that anchor. And the House of Worship has been that anchor. And if we can't do it holding them, you know, we're going to give them the elbow or the foot or whatever we're going to do virtually. We're going to be there for them. That's the one thing. We're going to be there for you one way or the other. You're not stopping us from being a part of your lives. Right.
That is so true. You know, I've been telling people, as a church, as a congregation, we will adapt. Because I'm trying to form people who are resilient and can manage all the different challenges the world faces. And that's ideally what our faith allows us to do, right? Be resilient, to adapt.
Well, Reverends, I know Reverend Bernard and I, we had the privilege of speaking to Rabbi David Shuck earlier, Beth Ellen and Rochelle. Now we have Father Gawain DeLeo, St. Bartholomew's Episcopal Church in White Plains. You two are the embodiment, as the others are in the community, of real spiritual strength. And we're inspired by you. Thank you so much,
Father DeLeo.
Stay safe.
Thank you. You too. God bless.
Bye-bye. I think the psalmist wrote years ago, lift your hands in holiness and bless the Lord. So today we listen to two people who certainly have lifted their hands. First, they washed their hands. Then they lifted their hands. But how courageous, how committed are these people, as so many others? I mean, all of us are facing trying circumstances, and we have to be exemplars of real strength.
Yeah, you and I were talking during the break about something key that Father DeLeo said about what we represent, and that is encouraging people to gather in community. And now for a season, we've got to discourage them from doing the very thing for which we exist and have been established as houses of worship, houses of gathering.
Look, I saw that phrase, as I mentioned earlier, social distancing. I said, wait a minute. That's antithetical. That's antithetical. How do you be social and distant? We've now learned that. That has become part of the technological experience. And with all the complaints we have about technology, with all of the, you know, concerns we have about the wrong that technology or how it interrupts our lives, thank God we have it in our lives because it's able to bring us together virtually where we couldn't in any other way do it.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And this is a weekend in which many houses of worship have to make some serious adjustments. You know, this past week, finally Governor Cuomo came out and actually put out a ban on public events for more than 500 people in order to try to contain the spread of the virus. And, you know, for those churches, for those houses of worship that are less than that, you know, they're okay, but there are many who are larger than that, and they have to decide, oh, what do we do?
Yeah.
Tell half of them to stay home, half of them to come, you know, what do we do?
And so even the ones with smaller attendance than 500 are going to think, what's best for us? Everybody's going to weigh health considerations with religious traditions and then come to a ruling that makes sense for them. That's why I don't like to rule for anyone else. Each congregation, each community knows what's in their best interest. And they will be wrestling with this and resolving it. That protects people for it. You got to protect people. They have to be, you know, safe that way. And everything else begins to fall into place. So, but you have Absolutely. You have 500 people living in your house. I don't know how you went. You know, you had the house of worship.
You weren't supposed to let that out. You know, but I'm thinking, Rabbi. Look, you know, long term, how long we, you know, we had Rabbi Shook say to us that they have to shut down until March 27th. Yeah. That is several weeks.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to have an economic impact. I mean, it's just across the board, you know, and there are those who are not prepared for something like that.
Yeah. Well, they're going to have to be prepared overnight very quickly. So, I came into the studio feeling somewhat disheartened. I walk away feeling heartened. Very, very inspirational people. Thank you so much.
We're still the house of worship, but the house of hope.
Yeah, and wherever we go, we're creating our own house of worship.
Absolutely. Right. Thank you for listening.
Next week.
Till next week. God bless.